Support for KSJD's streaming comes from Osprey PAX, independent since 1974, setting the standard for creating and producing innovative, high-quality, caring equipment designed to inspire and ease your journey. Osprey PAX is committed to the local communities where it operates and to protecting the wild places its customers love to explore. For more information, visit OspreyPAX.com.
This is KSJD. Welcome to another episode of Pandora's Box, where we take a look at the other side of the story on the environment and your health. At the World Health Organization's annual meeting in Geneva last week, representatives from 194 countries approved a new plan to counter antimicrobial resistance. This morning we will talk about why antibiotic resistance is a global problem and what some solutions might look like. I'm Tom Yoder, here with Pandora's Box co-host Dr. Lynn Patrick. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
Lynn, what is antibiotic resistance? What does that look like?
Well, most commonly we know about MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, and that's a bacteria that we have on our skin, Staph aureus, and in our mucous membranes. And it can overgrow, and especially wounds or scabs can become infected. And Staph aureus has been known up until recently to be extremely sensitive to the antibiotic methicillin, which is a form of penicillin. What happened, and the story is pretty fascinating, is that we actually passed it to livestock. Livestock, which receive 70% of the antibiotics that humans use in the United States, mostly for growth promotion, not to treat disease. So with the presence of these antibiotics in the systems of the animals, the staph became resistant. Now, these interesting little bacteria that are probably about 3 pounds of our body weight, in larger people, 5 pounds, have the ability to mutate. But not only do they mutate in the presence of antibiotics, they have DNA that can become resistant to antibiotics and can be passed on to other species of bacteria. So these little plasmids, they're called, little pieces of DNA, can actually help other species of bacteria become resistant to antibiotics as well. So even though we know that MRSA is the most common antimicrobial drug-resistant pathogen in the United States, there are many other pathogens that have become resistant. And one of the things that was brought up at the World Health Assembly is that it's not just Staph aureus, it's malaria, tuberculosis, and now the sexually transmitted disease gonorrhea, which used to be very treatable but now has become resistant to a whole host of antibiotics. So what physicians say and what a lot of public health officials say is that we might be moving into something that they call the post-antibiotic era. And if we want to think about the pre-antibiotic era, you know, pre-1930s, people died very commonly of infections that we don't even think of as a problem now because of their ability to be treated by antibiotics. But we may be moving out of this era and into a new era.
So what are people thinking about in terms of what we can do about this issue? What's being done?
Well, in the United States, and this just happened, this came out the end of March of this year, the White House released a plan called the National Action Plan for Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria, right? And so this is basically an executive order passed down from the White House, and it goes to several different groups. One of the groups that it's going to go out to is hospitals and outpatient settings. Now, we know about 50%, that's the figure that's passed around in medical settings, 50% of antibiotics that are prescribed are inappropriate. And that's usually for, you know, what we commonly think of as viral influenza, right? Influenza is a virus. It's not treated by antibiotics. People go to the doctor begging for something. You know, if they don't get Tamiflu, then they might get a prescription for an antibiotic. So that's going to stop. 20% of all the antibiotics that are prescribed in hospitals are actually inappropriate. So what the White House is asking is, let's stop that as well. But the other interesting area is the elimination, and this is by 2020, so in 5 years, the elimination of medically important antibiotics for growth promotion food-producing animals. And this is because of the fact that 70% of all the antibiotics that are used in human care are used also in animals, the most of them for growth promotion. Now, this is really a big deal in chickens because we go from chick to broiler in 2 months, right? Chickens grow really fast. And one of the reasons they grow really fast is because they're given antibiotics to prevent them from getting sick. But also some of these antibiotics, the arsenic-based ones, actually make them diabetic. I know that sounds crazy, but it makes them get fat really quickly. So that was the first thing to be phased out, is the arsenic-based antibiotics. And they actually, Roxarsone has actually been taken off the market now. So what's coming up is the antibiotics that are used for growth promotion, not just in chickens, but in swine as well, and in cattle. Now, the other reason that these antibiotics are used is because in combined animal feedlot operations, where you've got, you know, 100,000 chickens in one big area, there's a lot of crowding, there's a lot of disease. These antibiotics are used for that reason. Now, in the Netherlands and in Denmark, they have understood this whole problem with, you know, this is a problem in Europe as well. 25,000 people in Europe die every year from antibiotic-resistant diseases. So the governments of the Netherlands and Denmark said, you know, we have to stop using antibiotics in animals. And they did back in 1999. What they found is that they could easily do that. They eliminated all antibiotics from animal feed, only give them to very sick animals. But what they had to do is really clean up their combined animal feedlot operations. Whether we're going to do that in this country or not remains to be seen.
It sounds like it could have a big impact on the ag industry, for sure.
It will, absolutely.
Yeah. You're listening to Pandora's Box here on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning we're talking about antimicrobial resistance around the world and what can be done about it. I'm here with Pandora's Box co-host, Dr. Lynn Patrick. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk more. Stay with us. We're back. You're listening to KSJD. That's another episode of Pandora's Box this morning, where we take a look at the other side of the story on the environment and your health. And I'm Tom Yoder, here with Pandora's Box co-host Dr. Lynn Patrick, and we're talking about antimicrobial resistance, how this is a problem across the world and what's being done. Lynn, you know, I hear so many times in the media and commercials, lots of restaurants and other industry are saying, oh, well, we are not using antibiotics anymore. What's going on behind that?
Well, they're transitioning. That's what's really happening. The big news, McDonald's just came out in the news saying that they are going to transition to antibiotic-free animals, and you know, basically beef and chicken. And so is Panera, which has already gone antibiotic-free. Panera Bread, which is you know, fast food.
High-end fast food outlet.
Tyson, which is one of the major manufacturers of not just chicken, but beef, pork, and turkey, are going to reduce their antibiotic use. Now, remember that this is an executive order from the White House. So they're voluntarily complying with an executive order, which is kind of an oxymoron. But be that as it may, this is a very important thing. Even Walmart now is asking their suppliers to adopt what's called the Judicious Use Principles of Antimicrobial Use from the American Veterinary Medical Association. So what that means is that they're going to limit their antimicrobial treatment to only animals that are sick, which is huge. It's going to really, really reduce the use of antimicrobials. And it's going to, you know, it's not going to take away MRSA and Clostridium or C. diff, which is one of the biggest causes of hospital-acquired antimicrobially resistant infection. But it's certainly going to stop the problem of transferring these antimicrobial, these resistant bacteria from animals to humans. That's you know, that's the news, really, is that this has been a problem historically. And that's why it's a big part of this new White House implementation, this White House executive order.
Lynn, why aren't we just looking at new drugs and saying, oh, well, let's just make some new antibiotics that are going to take care of this issue, and we'll rely on, you know, the pharmaceutical industry to fix this for us?
Well, historically, the pharmaceutical industry has been transitioning away from antimicrobial research, antibiotic research, because it costs now up to $1 billion. That's a B, not an M, dollars to bring a drug to market. And in order to do that, pharmaceutical companies are really focusing on getting their research and development money back. And this all sounds very technical, and it's not. It's really about a profit-driven industry. But what they're saying, and this was actually a quote from a frontline interview of a Pfizer CEO, that they are responsible for portfolio development. What that means is we have to develop drugs that people are going to take every day for the rest of their lives. That's how we're going to get our money back. Antibiotics are not like that. People don't take them every day for the rest of their lives, and they shouldn't do that. It's how we got into this problem in the first place. When penicillin was developed, 1943, the developer of penicillin actually said in 1945, he said, look out, you're going to, you know, bacteria are going to develop resistance to this drug. What happened in the 50s and the late 40s, doctors started giving penicillin to people all winter long, saying, just take this drug every day for, you know, all winter long, you won't get a cold. And then people started coming into the doctor with these pretty significant fungal infections as a result. So that was the end of that. But the problem is really that there is no incentive. And one of the things that this White House executive order is asking is for the pharmaceutical industry to become involved in developing new antibiotics. One of the interesting turns, twists of fate, so to speak, that's happened in medicine, and this is because one of our biggest problems in hospitals is the development of resistance to a bug that is now epidemic in hospitals called Clostridium difficile, or C. diff. It causes diarrhea. And there are 29,000 people in the United States that acquire C. diff diarrhea and die in this country, out of the 2 million people every year that develop antibiotic-resistant infections. back in, I think this was about 10 years ago, a physician at the University of Minnesota, Dr. Alex Korutz, wonderful guy, had been doing research on mice. And he found that if he transplanted the feces of a healthy mouse into the intestinal canal through a kind of a colonoscopic, you know, through the anus, through the rectum of the mouse, that the mouse would recover. And so he actually had a patient who was dying of C. diff diarrhea. This woman had lost 40 pounds. She'd been on 5 different antibiotics, 4 different probiotics, you know, the good guy bacteria, and nothing. He took her husband's stool. He purified it, made sure it was clean and free of viruses and parasites. They introduced it via a colonoscopic procedure, and she went into a full recovery within 24 hours. This is a woman who'd been having 30 episodes of diarrhea a day. So that was one of the first. Now we're at the point where there are 100 gastroenterologists in the United States who are doing these procedures. Dr. Korutz just published a new study looking at the what's now called fecal transplantation, showing that those it normalizes the gut microbiota. So probably what these healthy stool from another person do is they have a signaling mechanism. They signal to the invasive bacteria in the gut to die, literally. They die, and the good guy bacteria in that healthy feces communicates with the good guy bacteria in that person's stool to reproduce. It's fascinating. But there are many published studies. They've been, you know, this research has been published in the New England Journal of Medicine, one of the most conservative medical journals in the world, showing that fecal transplantation works. The problem is the FDA has not a clue about how to regulate it. So it's now considered an experimental drug. So to do this procedure, you have to apply for experimental drug status and work within those confines. Industry is coming up with a brand new solution. So we now have stool banks. Open Biome is one of them on the East Coast. A new one just opened in Sacramento that are run as laboratories, and they're run by microbiologists, where they actually have healthy stool, freeze-dried, which works just as good. It works just as well as the real thing.
Just as good as fresh.
Just as good as fresh. So you can take them in a pill form, and you can actually apply to these banks.
Wow. That is really, really fascinating stuff. Quickly, do you want to just mention also what's happening in Great Britain? There's some work that's being done there, too, around this.
So at the University of Nottingham, in Nottingham Center for Biomolecular Sciences, they have dug up literally a 1,000-year-old remedy for eye infections. And Staph aureus, which is the most common cause of infections in the eye, also the most common cause of MRSA. What they found is that this ancient remedy, which consists of garlic, leeks, ox bile, bile from cows, and wine, actually works for MRSA in an animal model. So they're actually developing this probably as a drug to be used for MRSA, which is great. We already know there's some evidence from the medical literature that garlic works for MRSA. So I think this is doing it one better. So this is in the animal model stage. It hasn't gone to clinical trials yet, but they're developing it so that it will be available. And they're working on getting it into clinical trials for humans.
Wow. Well, that's a little bit of good news, I guess, to end up on.
Very good news. Wine, ox bile, and garlic.
There's your formula, folks. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to another episode of Pandora's Box here on KSJD, where we take a look at the other side of the story on the environment and your health. I'm Tom Yoder, along with Pandora's Box co-host, Dr. Lynn Patrick.
And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Take care and take your garlic.